Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. So, here's a question for you. 35 years ago, President Reagan delivered a most historic speech. Can you recall which one? And here's a hint.
There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Yes, that's an excerpt from his speech on June 12, 1987, calling for the destruction of the Berlin Wall in the name of freedom. So in this podcast, we thought it might be interesting to cover a bit of the history of the Berlin Wall, a bit of the history of this speech, and of course, listen to excerpts. The Brandenburg Gate was constructed in Berlin, 1791, as a symbol of peace by Prussian King Frederick William II, and it was a key entry point to the city of Berlin. It was topped off with a statue known as the Quadriga, which depicts the goddess of victory driving a chariot pulled by four horses. The statue remained in place for just over a decade before falling into the clutches of Napoleon, who nabbed the Quadriga and shipped it back to Paris. It languished in storage until 1814, when Paris itself was captured by Prussian soldiers following Napoleon's defeat, and the Quadriga then was returned to Berlin, once again installed atop the Brandenburg Gate. This time with one change. As a symbol of Prussia's military victory over France, an iron cross was added to the statue. The cross was later removed during the communist era and only permanently restored in 1990 during the unification of Germany. When Hitler became chancellor in 1933, he was treated to a torchlight procession through Berlin as thousands of brown-shirted stormtroopers and SS members passed under the Brandenburg Gate to the presidential palace, where Hitler and high-ranking members of the Nazi Party cheered. It was the first of many large-scale propaganda events held by the Nazis as they tightened their control over Germany in the years leading up to World War II. Once the war ended, the Brandenburg Gate resided in the eastern sector of Berlin. In one of the last cooperative measures before the erection of the Berlin Wall in 1961, the East and West Berlin authorities worked together on its restoration. Once the wall went up, however, access to the gate, located in what was now East Berlin, was cut off. Almost 2 years after the Berlin Wall was erected, John F. Kennedy delivered one of the most famous addresses of his presidency to a crowd of more than 120,000 people gathered outside West Berlin City Hall, not far from the Brandenburg Gate. In June 1987, President Reagan described what he saw.
Behind me stands a wall that encircles the free sectors of this city, part of a vast system of barriers that divides the entire continent of Europe. From the Baltic south, those barriers cut across Germany in a gash of barbed wire, concrete, dog runs, and guard towers. Farther south, there may be no visible, no obvious wall, but there remain armed guards and checkpoints all the same. Still a restriction on the right to travel. Still an instrument to impose upon ordinary men and women the will of a totalitarian state. Yet it is here in Berlin where the wall emerges most clearly. Here, cutting across your city, where the news photo and the television screen have imprinted this brutal division of a continent upon the mind of the world. Standing before the Brandenburg Gate, every man is a German, separated from his fellow men. Every man is a Berliner, forced to look upon a scar.
Constructed in the early hours on August 13, 1961, the Berlin Wall was characterized by the Soviets as a democratic, anti-fascist, protective structure. Huh. Now, isn't that an interesting statement? Today, Putin is using the same angle, claiming their intrusion into Ukraine is an anti-fascist gesture. The Berlin Wall was built to end the flow of East Germans into the West. The wall was built, and within hours, friends and family were divided by barbed wire and concrete. If you send in tanks, Khrushchev threatened his foes, they will burn and make no mistake about it. The reaction from the West? Well, while Kennedy was furious, his response was reserved. Khrushchev read Kennedy well and told Robert Frost during his visit to the Soviet Union that Kennedy was too liberal to fight. As early as 1967, when Ronald Reagan was governor of California, he had asked for the destruction of the wall. In a debate with Senator Robert Kennedy, he said it would be very admirable if the Berlin Wall, which was built in direct contravention to a treaty, should disappear. Fast forward to the spring of 1987. Negotiations from the Reykjavik summit in 1986 had stalled. Gorbachev noted after visiting the Berlin Wall, get this, that at the Brandenburg Gate, one can clearly see how much strength and true heroism the defense of the first socialist state on German soil requires against the attacks of the class enemy. Aware of such language, President Reagan was ready to level stronger demands, which would echo throughout the West, reverberate behind prison gates in the East, and ignite a resolve to fight for freedom. By 1987, President Reagan was ready to take freedom on the offensive into the heart of the disintegrating Soviet empire. Let's listen.
Where 4 decades ago there was rubble, today in West Berlin there is the greatest industrial output of any city in Germany. Busy office blocks, fine homes and apartments, proud avenues and the spreading lawns of parkland. Where a city's culture seemed to have been destroyed, today there are 2 great universities, orchestras and an opera, countless theaters and museums. Where there was want, today there's abundance. Food, clothing, automobiles, the wonderful goods of the coup d'etat. From devastation, from utter ruin, you Berliners have in freedom rebuilt a city that once again ranks as one of the greatest on earth. Well, the Soviets may have had other plans, but my friends, there were a few things the Soviets didn't count on. Berliner Herz, Berliner Humor, Ja und Berliner Schnauzer. In the 1950s, Khrushchev predicted, we will bury you. But in the West today, we see a free world that has achieved a level of prosperity and well-being unprecedented in all human history. In the communist world, we see failure, technological backwardness, declining standards of health, even want of the most basic kind, too little food. Even today, the Soviet Union still cannot feed itself. After these 4 decades, then, there stands before the entire world one great and inescapable conclusion. Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom replaces the ancient hatreds among nations with comity and peace. Freedom is the victor. Soviets themselves may, in a limited way, be coming to understand the importance of freedom. We hear much from Moscow about a new policy of reform and openness. Some political prisoners have been released. Certain foreign news broadcasts are no longer being jammed. Some economic enterprises have been permitted to operate with greater freedom from state control. Are these the beginnings of profound changes in the Soviet state, or are they token gestures intended to raise false hopes in the West or to strengthen the Soviet system without changing it? We welcome change and openness, for we believe that freedom and security go together, that the advance of human liberty can only strengthen the cause of world peace.
More about arguments regarding the content of the speech and a global reaction to the president's speech after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles, individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story. As for the speech, President Reagan's own advisors were intimidated by Soviet bravado and preferred a softer message, a kind of walking on eggs, don't ruffle their communist feathers. After all, the Reykjavik summit had brought about a stalemate. Peter Robinson, speechwriter, was sent to Berlin to conduct research for the assignment in 1987. He met with advisors and diplomats, and he was told no chest thumping, no Soviet bashing, no inflammatory statements about the Berlin Wall. But in a dinner conversation with local residents, they suggested that the president ask Gorbachev to tear down the wall if he was really serious about perestroika and glasnost. Peter Robinson thought the words were perfect. To the point, strong, truthful, Reagan-esque. Note to self, include in draft. Then virtually the entire foreign policy apparatus of the U.S. government tried to stop President Reagan from saying tear down this wall. Even the New York Times reported, some Reagan advisors wanted an address with less polemics. Well, in the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library archives, documents chronicle the opposition's intensity. His advisors urgently requested he remove certain provocative language. President Reagan's own Secretary of State, his National Security Advisor, a cadre of ranking diplomats and experts in foreign policy told him to redline that phrase, the part that was clumsy and naive, that part that would raise false hopes. You know, that part about tearing down the wall. But how do you prevent President Reagan, a man of conviction, from speaking his mind? A few days before the speech, President Reagan reminded his advisors, I'm the president, right? So, at last, on a cold spring day at the Brandenburg Gate in 1987, President Reagan delivered his speech with his words in his tone, wearing a new blue suit and his lucky cufflinks that Nancy had given to him. He spoke to tens of thousands of attentive West Germans, while the imprisoned residents of East Berlin huddled on the other side, straining to hear his message, despite the efforts of communist leaders to squelch wise words from the West. Expecting provocative and slanderous abuse of the DDR, Stasi chief Erich Mielke panicked and ordered a general alert with the highest amount of vigilance on the part of the secret police. Here's another excerpt where the president empathizes and shows how freedom is transforming the globe.
I understand the fear of war and the pain of division that afflict this continent, and I pledge to you my country's efforts to help overcome these burdens. To be sure, we in the West must resist Soviet expansion, so we must maintain defenses of unassailable strength. Yet we seek peace. So we must strive to reduce arms on both sides. Beginning 10 years ago, the Soviets challenged the Western alliance with a grave new threat. Hundreds of new and more deadly SS-20 nuclear missiles, capable of striking every capital in Europe. The Western alliance responded by committing itself to a counter-deployment. Unless the Soviets agreed to negotiate a better solution, namely the elimination of such weapons on both sides. For many months, the Soviets refused to bargain in earnestness. As the alliance in turn prepared to go forward with its counter-deployment, there were difficult days of protests, like those during my 1982 visit to this city. And the Soviets later walked away from the table. But through it all, the alliance held firm. And I invite those who protested then, I invite those who protest today, to mark this fact. Because we remained strong, the Soviets came back to the table. Because we remain strong today, we have within reach the possibility not merely of limiting the growth of arms, but of eliminating for the first time an entire class of nuclear weapons from the face of the earth. As I speak, NATO ministers are meeting in Iceland to review the progress of our proposals for eliminating these weapons. At the talks in Geneva, we have also proposed deep cuts in strategic offensive weapons. And the Western allies have likewise made far-reaching proposals to reduce the danger of conventional war and to place a total ban on chemical weapons. While we pursue these arms reductions, I pledge to you that we will maintain the capacity to deter Soviet aggression at any level at which it might occur. And in cooperation with many of our allies, the United States is pursuing the Strategic Defense Initiative, research to base deterrence not on the threat of offensive retaliation, but on defenses that truly defend, on systems, in short, that will not target populations, but shield them. By these means, we seek to increase the safety of Europe and all the world. But we must remember a crucial fact. East and West do not mistrust each other because we are armed. We are armed because we mistrust each other. And our differences are not about weapons, but about liberty. When President Kennedy spoke at the City Hall those 24 years ago, freedom was encircled. Berlin was under siege. And today, despite all the pressures upon this city, Berlin stands secure in its liberty, and freedom itself is transforming the globe. In the Philippines, in South and Central America, democracy has been given a rebirth. Throughout the Pacific, free markets are working miracle after miracle of economic growth. In the industrialized nations, a technological revolution is taking place, a revolution marked by rapid, dramatic advances in computers and telecommunications. In Europe, only one nation, and those it controls, refuse to join the community of freedom. Yet in this age of redoubled economic growth, of information and innovation, the Soviet Union faces a choice. It must make fundamental changes, or it will become obsolete. Today thus represents a moment of hope. We in the West stand ready to cooperate with the East to promote true openness, to break down barriers that separate people, to create a safer, freer world.
So, after the speech, President Reagan diligently continued his campaign for freedom. Historian Stephen Hayward carefully documented how the president, over the next year and a half, before he left office, repeated the call to tear down the wall another 14 times, four times in his Saturday radio addresses, three times in special radio broadcasts to Europe, five times in speeches to U.S. audiences, and twice during interviews with foreign journalists. Funny thing. While the Soviets squirmed and the East Germans worked on reinforcing the wall, U.S. intelligence began observing increased cable traffic from Moscow to East Germany, suggesting that the East Germans ease restrictions on passing through the wall. Finally, the Berlin Wall fell in November 1989, 29 months after President ignored the State Department's requests. Solidarity came to power in Poland, with Czechoslovakia following. Lech Walesa said Ronald Reagan was the main author of the victory of the free world over the evil empire. In a final gesture, the Warsaw Pact was dissolved, and three Baltic republics that had disappeared with the 1939 deal between Hitler and Stalin, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, reclaimed their independence. They fell for freedom like dominoes. After the president's words pushed the first one over, President's final thoughts were brief and direct. Here's how he closed.
Perhaps this gets to the root of the matter, to the most fundamental distinction of all between East and West. The totalitarian world produces backwardness because it does such violence to the spirit, thwarting the human impulse to create, to enjoy, to worship. The totalitarian world finds even symbols of love and of worship an affront. Years ago, before the East Germans began rebuilding their churches, they erected a secular structure, the television tower at Alexanderplatz. Virtually ever since, the authorities have been working to correct what they view as the tower's one major flaw: treating the glass sphere at the top with paints and chemicals of every kind. Yet even today, when the sun strikes that sphere that towers over all Berlin, the light makes the sign of the cross. There in Berlin, like the city itself, symbols of love, symbols of worship, cannot be suppressed. As I looked out a moment ago from the Reichstag, that embodiment of German unity, I noticed words crudely spray-painted upon the wall, perhaps by a young Berliner. Quote, "This wall will fall, beliefs become reality." Yes, across Europe this wall will fall, for it cannot withstand faith. It cannot withstand truth. The wall cannot withstand freedom.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast, featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.